Hello again, my friends, and welcome to episode 5 of Moral's podcast. We're going to continue talking about some more movies with my guest again, Grandpa Glasses.
Hello.
Yeah, we talked a lot about the Star Wars thing. We talked a lot about it.
Yeah. We talked about the original trilogy. We talked a little bit about the prequels, but now we're going to be talking about a couple of different movies, a couple of classics.
Yeah, so if you folks haven't seen the previous podcast, episode 4, there's a little card you can click on if you'd like to hear our discussion about Star Wars episode 4 to 6. But other than that, let's go ahead and talk about some other classics. So the first classic we're going to talk about is Citizen Kane.
The first feature movie by Orson Welles. He directed it, he acted in it, and I think he wrote the screenplay for it. He basically did everything for it.
Yeah, that's crazy. Yeah. Usually there'd be somebody doing different things, but then you have like, oh, one person that's doing a lot of all this stuff. And it actually came out to be a good movie.
It's pretty insane, because a lot of people who have like a huge amount of creative control tend to go a little crazy when they're doing it. He made a pretty solid movie, in my opinion. I think it's pretty all right.
Yeah, so it kind of starts out with the camera lingers on like a little no trespassing sign, and then there's like a large K on the gate.
Yeah, for his manor, where he's like in isolation. He just has no trespassing.
Yeah, and then the camera just keeps going and going until you see a little snow globe in the hand of an old man. He focuses on the old man's mouth, and then he whispers this one word, Rosebud. Then he drops the globe and then dies or something after that, or I don't know what happens, but...
Oh, yeah, he dies. That was Charles Foster Kane. He's the main driving force of the plot. Basically, the whole plot of Citizen Kane is that this wealthy newspaper owner and, like, former governor and stuff like that said the word Rosebud, and nobody knew, like, what he was talking about, like, what he was saying.
Yeah, and then the reporters were trying to figure out, like, what that means. And so after, like, that scene, it goes into, like, a flashback, like, all the way to the beginning where Charles Foster Kane doing the stuff with the newspaper, like, with his career.
Basically, the whole idea of the movie is that this interviewer is interviewing people who knew Charles Foster Kane, and it does these flashbacks, basically in chronological order, how he became, like, the person he was.
Yeah, and then they were trying to figure out what his last word, Rosebud, meant. I mean, that was like the whole purpose of like going through these flashbacks. They're trying to find out what was something that was like very significant in his life.
I think at one point the interviewer was thinking that it could be like a woman that he used to love or something like that.
Yeah, and then I think the name of the reporter, I think, is Thompson, right? Or something. I think that's the interviewer.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure it's Thompson, yeah.
Yeah, the first person that he interviews was his ex-wife, Susan Alexander Kane. At that moment, I think she was drunk, and she didn't want to talk about him at the time.
It's been a couple years since I've seen the movie, because a lot of critics praise this movie, and they say it's like the greatest movie ever, because it was one of like the driving forces of the Artur era, because a lot of filmmakers took inspiration from this movie.
Yeah, there was just all this stuff going on, and then the whole plot of like trying to figure out the whole point of the flashbacks. I kind of see like why they think, or why some critics think, is a really good movie. I think so too.
I think it starts with him as a child, like going off to a boarding school, like his mom sending him off to boarding school.
That was the first flashback,
or I'm pretty sure it was.
Yeah, because there was like different flashbacks, and it shows his life story from like different points of view.
Yeah, I always like that idea. It's kind of like, how would people view you after you're dead, pretty much? Like, were you a good person? Were you not? It's basically the whole idea of the whole flashback structure for this movie.
Yeah. He had a couple of good friends and employees, one of them being Mr. Bernstein, the only character who loves Kane unconditionally.
Yeah. That's a major theme of the movie, is that a lot of people don't respect Kane, and they use him because of how powerful he is, and like he slowly turns corrupt because he doesn't have any real people around him.
Yeah, other than the ex-wife. Her name again is Susan Alexander Kane.
I know what you're talking about. He was forcing Susan to be in an opera career, even though she didn't want to. she didn't have like any talent or like ambition to be able to pull off a starring performance. There's this really great scene in that flashback where like Charles starts like clapping like really angrily because no one else is really clapping that much.
Overall, all these flashbacks, I guess, in the end, kind of goes back to that same scene that we saw in the beginning. I don't know if they ever found out about what Rosebud was. I guess we never knew what happened after that.
The movie ends with like a close-up of Charles's sled from when he was a kid that says Rosebud as it's being burned, because they're just like removing all of his junk because, you know, he's dead.
Yeah.
I'm sure there's like some film critics who like analyze it, but I think the whole point of Rosebud is that it's just like the last time Charles Foster Kane was like truly happy, like truly like innocent. Because even when he was like a young person at the newspaper, he was participating in like, you know, sensationalism with his newspaper articles, fabricating stuff, exaggerating it, stuff like that. I know you haven't seen Breaking Bad, but it's very similar to that in that he slowly becomes more and more sad and corrupt as it goes on.
Oh, okay. Do you recommend me watching Breaking Bad?
Definitely. It is one of the best TV shows ever made.
All right, I'll keep that in mind. But that's a good connection. Kind of makes me a bit more interested to look into Breaking Bad.
Yeah. There's so many things influenced by Citizen Kane, from like its whole plot idea to its use of deep focus camera, you know, stuff like that.
I thought the editing in that film was pretty good. It put more emphasis on the Rosebud.
Oh, do you remember the one scene where Charles is giving a speech to like that gigantic crowd?
I think so. He was running for something, right?
Yeah, he was running for governor against someone else, and he was saying he was going to criminally indict him if he is elected governor. And
ouch.
There's a lot of parallels people make to dictators in real life with that speech.
Yeah, because I remember, like, if you could compare that to like some of like the recent presidential debates, it's like the candidates try to make each other look bad. So it's like why are you going to do that? It just makes both of you look bad either way.
Yeah, it's pretty much exactly like that. It's just, I'm not sure what the term is. Hitler did like a similar sort of speech where he was like promoting the people, you know, he was running for the people, and a lot of people elected him, and, you know, he turned out to be not so good of a guy. I think that's kind of the same idea. This came out before the end of World War II, so I'm not sure if Orson Welles got inspiration from Hitler or not.
I don't know, possibly, maybe.
I'm sure he must have gotten it from somewhere, because there's no way like he just like accidentally added that in.
Yeah, of course. So yeah, we can move on to the next movie we're going to talk about, which is Casablanca.
Casablanca. That is Roger Ebert's favorite movie. Fun little trivia fact.
Yeah, I kind of like that too. There's like a little romance going on.
It's kind of like a film noir. It's kind of like one of those, you know, detective movies in the way it's shot. It was black and white. The beauty of black and white is that you can contrast black with white in order to create really effective imagery, because there's only, you know, two colors and everything in between.
Yeah, and speaking of World War II, this movie, I think, was kind of inspired by World War II.
It was filmed during the course of World War II. It focuses on a leader of like some sort of resistance for the Czech Republic, who the main female lead is married to. The story picks up in Humphrey Bogart's little bar.
The name of the character that he plays as is Rick, right?
Yeah, it's Rick Blaine. But I always see Humphrey Bogart, so I just call him that.
All right. Yeah, his little cafe is called Americane, which is like a nightclub and casino. Wait, what? Stylish nightclub casino.
It is Rick's Cafe Americane. The whole concept for the bar is kind of like the same thing Quentin Tarantino did with The Hateful Eight. It's to get a bunch of like nationalities onto one location, then have them interact with each other. It's basically just a drama because Rick Blaine has the power to get Ilsa's boyfriend, Victor, out of the country, but he doesn't want to. Victor Laszlo. He was the leader of the Czech Republic's resistance against the Nazis, I guess.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and then Ilsa, like when she first had an encounter with Rick, it's like they haven't seen each other in a long time. It's like Ilsa was like actually looking for Rick, and they wanted to like catch up. And then I guess Ilsa later on fell in love with Rick, I think.
Well, they had a history together where like Rick and Ilsa had like this great time in Paris where like they got to know each other. And one day she basically just vanishes without Rick. And 3 years later, she like runs into his bar again. I'm not sure if it was 3 years. I'm sure it was a lot later. The whole concept of the movie, it's basically a drama where Rick still loves Ilsa, but he's really hurt by the fact that, you know, she left him for somebody else, pretty much.
And then at that moment, Rick, he was trying to, like, get back with her?
Yeah, then there was something going on there. He definitely wanted to be back with her, but I felt like he didn't want to be betrayed again, so he was kind of acting like a dick to her the entire time.
Oh, yeah, yeah, I remember that part. That kind of makes more sense.
Yeah. It's a very memorable movie. Like, a lot of people really like the song that's in it, the theme song, which I think was originally a Frank Sinatra song. Oh, it was As Time Goes By.
Oh, yeah, As Time Goes By.
Yeah, it's sung by Sam, who was a black role in the 1940s, which is pretty rare. He didn't really like affect the plot too much, but at least he wasn't negatively portrayed, you know?
Yeah, he was that one guy that was like playing the piano and singing.
That's right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, that was like their song. It was like Ilsa and Rick's song that he was singing.
Mm-hmm. And like he doesn't want him to ever play that song because it reminds him of Paris, you know, reminds him of when they were together.
Yeah, Rick was like, no, I told you don't play that song ever.
Yeah, and then he sees Ilsa, it's like, oh, well.
Yeah, awkward.
I can't even imagine what would be going through his head at that point.
I don't know, I guess he just, I don't know, wanted to avoid her. But Ilsa, yeah, just definitely keeps coming back.
Yeah. It's a good movie. It's interesting because it was filmed during World War II. It has a lot of World War II references, yet at the same time, it feels like a very timeless film because it focuses on characters and characters interacting with each other.
And then like later on in this, getting close to the ending, there was like two letters of transits, and one of them was going to be for Ilsa. Rick had to decide whether if he was going to go with her or just have Victor Laszlo go with her.
Right.
It was like an important decision he had to make there.
Yeah, and he didn't want to leave her behind or go without her. So he basically decides to stay, even though he has all these responsibilities as a leader, pretty much.
Yeah, and there's like a little plot that they were doing before that. They wanted to like have somebody arrested so they could do their escape.
Something like that.
There was like a little plot going on. I don't remember what it was. Cause like a little scheme.
Yeah, I don't remember that too well either. Like Citizen Kane, it's been a few years since I've seen it. I just remember the romantic subplot and stuff like that. Some general information.
Yeah, but in the end, Ilsa escapes with Victor Laszlo. Pretty much, Rick just stays at his cafe, continuing what he's doing, I guess.
Yeah, that's a pretty bittersweet ending. I guess the reason it was like that is because the censors didn't want Ilsa to leave her husband, because you got to remember this is the 1940s and it was completely different back then.
Oh, yeah.
It works to the movie's benefit. It's a much better ending than her staying with him.
Yeah, and then there's probably some more stuff before then, but again, it's been a while. It's for both of us, like since we watched the movie.
Yeah. I mean, I would still recommend it, despite not remembering a lot of it, because, you know, it's a very human movie, I feel. I think that's why people like movies in general. It's like, they like people in it. They don't like explosions and stuff like that, even though they say they do. What they really want is, you know, people that you can relate to, and then you have a good time.
Yeah, we don't want, like those Michael Bay films, like all the explosions.
Oh, gosh.
Yeah, we can't relate. Sorry, we
so
can't relate to that.
So many explosions in those movies. There's so much going on. I mean, if you're just there for, like, explosions and stuff like that, you get your money's worth, definitely. But if you want anything else, you know, watch anything else.
Yeah, like, can I relate to these explosions? I don't know.
Probably they're the not. Best characters in the movie. Oh, gosh. The fourth one had this ridiculous thing where it was, like, I think, like, the boyfriend of freaking, gosh, Mark Wahlberg. Do you know who that is?
Mark Wahlberg? Yeah, I know who he is. Wait, which movie are you referring to?
Mark Wahlberg's daughter was, like, underage, and then her boyfriend is, like, overage, and it's like, oh, it's totally legal because I was dating her in high school or something.
What the heck?
It was... about like 10 minutes of that shit. It's so annoying.
And that sounds cringy too. Like with that bit huge age difference.
I would recommend, like, since we're talking about it for a minute, I would recommend, like, the first Transformers. I would skip, like, all the rest of them. They're all bad.
Alright, before we get a little too much off topic, let's move into the last movie for this episode of the podcast, which is The Social Network.
Yep. A movie about Facebook and how it was created.
Yeah, I like that one too, because it kind of starts out in Harvard University, October 2003. A student, which is Mark Zuckerberg, which is played by Jesse Eisenberg.
Eisenberg, that's right.
He had an idea first to create a website to rate attractiveness of female undergraduates.
Yeah, for the campus.
Yeah, and then before that even happened, it starts off with Mark talking with his girlfriend at the time named Erica Albright, which is played by Rooney Mara. And then they were just talking...
I don't know who that is.
Yeah, me neither, but it's some girl that happened to be the girlfriend. But they were just going back and forth, I guess. I was confused what they were talking about. And then...
That was a signature thing of Aaron Sorkin. He was the screenwriter for that movie. I know that.
Okay.
A signature trademark of Aaron Sorkin is having people walk and talk a lot and have them talk incredibly fast because he types a lot of words in his scripts.
Yeah, they were just talking a lot. I mean, Mark was kind of like talking too fast. I felt like he was kind of being smart.
I think the whole concept is that he thinks he's like extremely smart, extremely witty, but at the same time, he isn't smart when it comes to like relationships and stuff like that and like personal people, which is... It's really ironic because he made Facebook.
Yeah, he was kind of being a little douchey to her, and then that's when she breaks up with him at that moment. Mm-hmm. In the course of like that whole night of the scene, it was like, I don't know how long that scene was, but it was like about 10 minutes, less than 10 minutes in that scene.
Something
I guess.
Like that.
Mm-hmm. He had his friend named Eduardo Saverin, which is played by Andrew Garfield.
Oh, Andrew Garfield. He's pretty good in The Social Network. I like him in that one.
Yeah, and then they come up with a website called facemash.com. They get to rate undergrad females of Harvard.
Mm-hmm.
And then there was like so much traffic going on the website. Everybody in the university was just checking it out, right? And then I guess somebody in the school board, they took notice of that. And then Mark ended up getting 6 months of academic probation.
Yeah. That whole sequence is pretty interesting. I'm not sure which one I'm thinking of, but like when they're like developing ideas. I think it was after the face mash part where they're just like, wow, that was like really popular. What if we made a website for that, you know?
He was doing like a blog too. And then at the moment, I remember he was drunk and he was just typing stuff about his ex-girlfriend. Yeah, she kind of hated him for doing that.
Yeah, he's kind of a jerk in this movie.
Yeah, I'm like, no, like, why are you drinking while you're, like trying to code for a website and doing a blog at the same time? You're, like, multitasking, you don't know what you're doing, man. Like, chill with the drinking.
Right. I couldn't imagine doing that, to be honest. Like, multitasking while you're drunk, like, ugh, that sounds terrible.
Yeah, later on, we come into the tension about two twins named Cameron and Tyler Winklevoss.
Yeah, they were twins.
Yeah, they were part of Harvard's rowing team. And, and they worked with somebody else named Divya Narendra. But yeah, they were looking for Mark. They wanted to have him work for the website called Harvard Connection.
Right. You know, Face Mash was so popular.
Oh, yeah. Then girls got, like, pissed off about that. It's like, oh, who the hell did this?
I couldn't imagine.
Yeah, and then later on, Mark approaches Eduardo, he tells him of an idea for a website called The Facebook, an online social networking website, which is kind of like, I guess, more features beyond Harvard Connection, because Harvard Connection was, it's like a social networking website for just Harvard students.
Mm-hmm.
And then Facebook.
Zuckerberg wanted to create a website for like a lot of people, you know, more than just like Harvard or Ivy League people.
Yeah, it started off as that school, then I guess among other Ivy League schools, and then later on the world.
Mm-hmm. And the Winklevoss twins didn't like that because, you know, it seemed very similar to the Harvard Connection website. So they try and like raise a complaint and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then there was like a lawsuit going on. And then we go through multiple flashbacks similar to like the flashbacks that we saw in Citizen Kane.
Yeah. It uses a framing device with Andrew Garfield's character. And like, you know, it keeps like going back to how they got there in the first place. A modern day Citizen Kane, actually. It's got similar themes of like how you start idealistic and then you end like, you know, kind of wizened, kind of like cynical, stuff like that.
And then later on, Mark and Eduardo, they meet a couple of Harvard University students, Christy Lee, played by Brenda Song. I'm sure most of you would know who Brenda Song is. She was in the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody.
I have no idea what the Sweet Life of Zack and Cody is.
It's on the Disney Channel.
Oh, that's probably why I didn't watch the Baby Channel.
The Baby Channel? That's Playhouse Disney, dude.
Oh, is it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, just like...
Yeah, I don't really know anything about Disney shows.
Yeah, just like Nickelodeon, there's like Nick Jr. and then so on. Yeah, but... Anyways, there's Christy Lee with her friend Alice, and then she's like, oh, Facebook us. And then later on, they invite both of them to the bar, and then they have sex in the bathroom stall. I'm like, what the hell?
I wouldn't do it there. Unsanitary.
I know, very
unsanitary. Going to say about it.
Oh, yeah. And then there's like a point where Mark runs into the ex-girlfriend again, Erica. I don't know if she found out if he was the one that did the face mash thing. But I don't
I'm pretty
know.
Sure she knew about it, because you know he got a 6 months probation for it and stuff like that.
Yeah. And then the Winklevoss twins, they had to go to the president of Harvard to kind of deal with the whole thing about stealing intellectual property, of the whole idea of the social networking. And then this is the part where we find out about another website called Napster. We get to see the co-founder, which is Sean Parker, played by Justin Timberlake.
Justin Timberlake, huh? He's in that movie.
Yeah,
I don't remember him at all.
Yeah, he is.
Wow, okay. I know he got into acting. I saw him in Time, but I didn't know he was in The Social Network.
He like invested in other websites and stuff like that, and then he was unsuccessful. But then he wanted to invest in the Facebook, which he suggested.
Oh, I remember him now. Yeah, he ends up getting caught for cocaine possession, which makes Zuckerberg cut ties with him, even though he gave him like a ton of money.
Yeah, and then at the time, also Eduardo, he was like kind of skeptical about Parker, because at the time when Christy, Eduardo, and Mark met up with Sean Parker in New York, they had like this, like a lot of food, buffet, and then Sean Parker wouldn't stop talking. He was just talking about his past experiences, and then he's like, oh, okay, let's get to the point. I want to invest in the Facebook, and then later on he suggested, you know what, take out the just Facebook sounds better.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It does sound better. Maybe that's why it's called The Social Network.
It's just called it Social Network.
Yeah. I bet you anything, that's why they called it that.
Yeah, and then there's like some funny stuff going on. Like, for example, when Eduardo, he changes his relationship status to single, and then Christy got pissed off. He was light his bed on fire.
Oh, yeah, she did do that, didn't she?
Yeah. She was like she was psychotic.
Yeah. Oh
my God.
I mean, when you're mad, you're not exactly rational, let's be real.
Yeah, but actually later on, Mark moves his company's base to California, which is what Parker suggested. And then Eduardo, he was doing advertising support in New York while he was doing an internship.
Mm-hmm.
He got pissed off because he got like a really little bit, like a really small share of like what the company was making. Sean Parker got a higher percentage of the share compared to Eduardo, so he got pissed off about that too. Which kind of, right. Yeah, which gets both of them in another lawsuit.
Yeah. It's really interesting because this movie is basically 90% dialogue, but it doesn't feel like that because there's so many things happening in it, you know? I think that's the sign of a good screenplay, that you don't notice that the whole thing is just talking. And you're just, like, so, like, invested in what's going on.
Yeah, yeah. It was, like, a lot of dialogue between the Winklevoss, then Mark and Eduardo.
Mm-hmm. That's really how you create good drama. The Dark Knight does, like, the same thing, where you get, like, these two incredibly well-developed characters, and you have them interact with each other. That's how you create good drama, really.
Yeah, and then pretty much the only reason why Mark listened to the advice that Sean Parker was advising him is because they were actually both alike, pretty much. Like, the way they think is pretty much the same.
Yeah.
But yeah, after all this dispute and stuff, it ends with Mark sending a friend request to his ex-girlfriend on Facebook, and it keeps refreshing the page to see if she responds.
That one scene is so... I wouldn't say it was powerful, but I would say it's very... What's the word? Poignant, I guess? Because it's just like, he's at like the head of the company, like the lawsuit's over, you know, stuff like that. And it's kind of like he's having to start over, you know, mm-hmm. like socially, even though he has all this money, you know?
Yeah, that's the start of Small Somewhere with Eduardo's investment. I think it was like around $1,000, like to start up the website. Mark had to like find some programmers to help him out with the website too.
Right.
And yeah, I guess Erica's never going to accept that friend request from Mark. I don't think so. She's going to stay pissed at him.
A lot of people... I know, like, the history behind the screenplay. Like, the movie attracted a little bit of controversy for basically dramatizing how Facebook was created. Like, that friend request scene, it's, like, it's very effective, but apparently it didn't actually happen in real life.
Yeah, I think we could kind of relate to it in a way, because... most of us use social networking sites. I mean, not specifically like Facebook. I mean, a lot of people use Facebook these days. Some use Twitter or Instagram or like all those other websites.
Yeah, and it's just like, I think the main point of the film is that despite like all this like this huge network that you have, a lot of people step over each other in order to get higher up in the world, despite the fact that we're more connected than ever.
Yeah, and then the couple of points of portrayal in The Social Network too, like with Eduardo mm-hmm. and Mark.
It's very interesting to think about.
Yeah, we could kind of relate that to Lando, like betraying them.
Yeah, it's pretty similar to that.
Do you have any final say about The Social Network?
Despite the fact that it's not like an accurate adaptation of the creation of Facebook, I think it's a very great movie. I think it's I'd say it's important. Like, I kind of hesitate to say the word important when we talk about certain movies, but it's really a relevant movie despite the fact that it was made like 7 years ago, because of how it talks about how we are as people, you know, how we are in the modern age of the internet. So if you haven't seen it before, I would recommend it.
Yeah, I definitely recommend it as well. Like what you said, it's not a very accurate representation of how it started, but like more or less.
Yeah, as long as it's a good movie, I feel it doesn't matter how accurate to the source material it is.
All right, yeah, that's a good way to end the Social Network topic. I want to thank you again, Grandpa Glasses, for joining me again for another episode to talk about some more good movies.
It's no problem. I mean, I talk forever, so, you know, I really don't mind at all.
All right, no worries. Glad to have you in. Really like the discussions we had, not only for just like the Star Wars in the previous episode of the podcast, but also we get to talk about some old classics as well. So I'm happy to discuss those with you. With someone that actually does like movie reviews on their channel.
Yeah.
Alright, and with that said, that concludes episode 5 of Moro's Podcast. If you enjoyed, please give it a like. If you'd like to see more, subscribe, leave a comment. If you like these movies, if you watched it, or your own critique on those movies, Until next time, have a great day and let the morals be with you.